At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Oh yeah, good morning, Joel. How are we doing this morning?
Doing good, Spencer. How are you on this hump day, this Wednesday, Triple D there? You're looking good. I like that shirt. I think I've seen that before. S&P futures traded down 4.25 handles. Talk with Dennis a second about the close, the last 9 minutes. Pretty wicked yesterday. Crude up 25 cents, 77.24. Gold in the green by $4 at 18.1860. Silver, that's flat, 23.07. Bitcoin, come on, Bitcoin, get away from this 45.5 or else we're in big time trouble. Down $40 at $46,265. Ethereum down $28.50 at $36.96. So, Triple D, we were on the verge of busting, closing over 4,800 with 9 minutes to go into session. And then, whoosh, rug pull. Now, my theory, and you get the imbalances before I did, I saw some buy imbalances. So aggressive traders, this is a theory, got ahead of those buy imbalances. And then you know what? The big boys said, I'm selling. And then they got caught. They had to sell into a falling market as opposed to unloading into the closing print. Am I close or not?
Honestly, Joel, it wasn't even that much. Like, I know you see a sell-off of 12 handles and you think, whoa, but we were choppy all day. Maybe not on the SPY, but on individual stocks, the SPY was not even on my screen. The SPY was so insignificant the entire day. It was all about rotation. I think, bring up a chart of deer.
Joel,
bring up the chart of
deer. Oh, I didn't share. It's fun to share.
DE, up $20 yesterday on nothing, just because it's a low PE stock. It was complete separation. I have never in 22 years seen that much rotation, that violent of rotation in my life. There was literally value stocks rallying 10% and growth stocks selling off 10%. Like, just bring up Berkshire Hathaway versus Cathie Wood. Burke, I think yesterday was up. What was Burke up yesterday?
It was
something like that.
Yeah. And Cathie was down like 6%. It was like a 9% blowout yesterday just versus Cathie in one day. Cathie versus Warren. That was crazy movement. I mean, you had growth stocks getting assassinated, and that money was running right into value. The banks could not stop going. That bank rip roaring 2-day rally is nothing short of incredible. I mean, JP Morgan 158 to 168 in 2 days. I mean, this market, it's interesting, we'll say that, but the rotation was unbelievable.
So is this like the pop, like the bubble pop, and just like everyone's getting too extended, or is this just a continuation and more of the same to come? I mean, we're not really seeing any weakness. Berkshire Hathaway's trading up another 88 cents today. JP Morgan, $10 run in 2 days at JP Morgan. Bank of America, same kind of thing. Intel's, I mean, will it ever stop is the question.
Yeah, It's going to turn and it's going to change, and then there's going to be different days of rotation. I mean, now if you're coming in growth, like, or you're coming in value, you're chasing now. So now what you want, you know, I even had a couple of people reaching out. What do you think of the banks now? What do you think of the banks? Because they're obviously ripping higher, so people are excited. I mean, now can I come in and buy them now? I mean, I want to pull back, but yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the banks being a trade for 2022 for, you know, a while, for the simple reason that interest rates, you know, are going up, and the pure play for interest rate hikes, at least in this market when interest rates are so low, is to be long the banks. So it's a textbook play that the banks eventually were going to catch a bid, and they did. You know, I've talked about Citigroup for, I don't know, I've talked about Citigroup, and obviously it was too early, 61, 60, 59, 58. I talked multiple times on the show late mid-December. It's now 64, so it's come around. I mean, there's just so, they're value, and they also got the interest rate, you know, catalyst here too.
The dividends.
So, and the dividends are okay. I mean, I think on pullbacks, you got to be long the banks. I think it's all about rotation. It's not going to just be straight down, straight up. I don't expect the banks to just continue. I think you're going to have some whipsaw action. You're going to have some shakeouts. Growth isn't just going to tank and go, you know, just go away here. But I think it's safe to say that when we look, you know, at the growth names, we are now replicating what happened in the year 2000. We topped out. So March 2000, we topped out in all the NASDAQ and all those growthy names.
I was going to say something about that. But
And we topped out in February of 2021. And we've followed a very similar path. I actually want to, like, you know, I've looked at this, you know, and, you know, we had some rallies in there. But we followed a similar path in the growth names where it was the death by a thousand cuts. A year later, we were down significantly in all those growth names. 2 years later, a lot of those growth names were down 90% from the highs. I think you're going to see a similar story in a lot of the growth names. I think you're going to see some stocks. I know, you know, obviously PTON's already down 70 or 80% from the highs, but I think you're going to see a lot of the growth names, a lot of these smaller names that probably don't even survive. So, you know, some of them are, but I mean, you know, you have 100 EV plays. We've said that all along. There isn't going to be 100 EV plays. There are going to be 25 charging, you know, stocks, you know, out there in the long run. So there's going to be separation. There'll be some winners, some losers. I think, you know, this market's trying to rebalance itself because it's been so focused on growth for so long. It's realized in the last few months it's not working. And now in 2022, it's just getting assassinated. So, I mean, I think it's all about balance. And I think you've got to be having some balance to your longer term portfolios. You can't be all growth. You can't be all value. You need balance. If you're all growth, you're getting hammered. If you're all value, you're laughing right now. But that'll change again, too. So use, you know, those pullbacks to rebalance yourself. And, you know, it's not, you can have some growth names, you know, pick which ones you think are going to be winners. But when you're paying 30, 40, 50 times sales for something, it ends up being a Zoom. And, you know, at a certain point, Zoom is making money. At a certain point, it becomes a value stock. But I don't know if we're at that point yet on a stock like that.
And they give you these moves like, you know, it makes a new low of the move and then pops like that. I mean, it, you know, so you're thinking, oh, I got stopped out. And then it, you know, it rallies, closes, you know, near the upper portion of the session. And then you come in, it's down 235. A new low of the move and then pops. So now you got, you know, if you were leading on the low of the move, you got stopped out yesterday. Yeah, if you want to try it again, 172.10. What's the low? What's the, do you have the PE still on Zoom?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I bet you it's still astronomical, right?
Forward PE, oh, it's actually going to come down, right? Obviously. So 39, which is not nosebleed, but still high.
39?
It's reasonable. But you know what the problem is?
But it's come down because the price has come down.
Yeah, but you know what else the problem is? Do you think they're going to continue to grow? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the earnings actually start contracting.
Oh, what if they miss? Oh.
Well, I just think there's so much competition. They're a one-trick pony. We need another trick. Zoom needs to come out and do something else. They can't just, because we've moved away from it. I mean, we've talked about this for a long time. We talked about this when we were $500. Well, it didn't make sense. I still don't know if it makes sense, even at a PE of 39. You can say, well, it's growing like crazy. Yeah, but you're looking at past. Is it going to continue to grow at those rates? I think the market's saying no. I'm saying no. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we've already had peak earnings on. Well, maybe it's going to grow a bit, but it's tough. You know, there's just so much competition there, especially if we're going to a full reopening. I just can't see. I just don't see the growth just for that product. So they need another product. until they get another product, I think it's a no touch for me. Going get back a cool to product, before, something else, maybe maybe you get interested.
So as it pertains to Zoom specifically, the first thing I thought of when like the metaverse became like a hot topic a few months ago was, whoa, like, wouldn't this be bad for Zoom? If we're all going to meet in the metaverse, then Zoom would have to develop their own metaverse solution. But going back to the broader point about value and growth, and Dennis's point about this being maybe the opposite of last year, whereas Zoom, right? In Zoom's case, Zoom topped out actually in October of 2020, so it actually topped out before a lot of the other growth stocks did. But just like these things, these growth names all kind of kept coming up and up and up until they didn't anymore, until there was just capitulation on the upside. Is this the opposite? Is this the same thing just on the downside?
I don't think so, because they're not cheap enough yet. I mean, we've went from where value was all story. A year ago, valuation doesn't matter, it was all story, and that was the market we're in. We're now in a value market where people are looking and they're saying, okay, well, what's the PE on that thing? And you see a nosebleed PE, and Zoom it's not crazy at 39 times now. It's come down a long ways. But at the same time, if the earnings aren't going to grow at the rate they were, it's still almost, 60% higher PE than the S&P. So, and, you've got the problem that there's a lot of competition coming in that space. So I don't know if it's the best candidate to try and be called the bottom. There's a lot of growth names that, interest me, but it's a tough right now. You want to be like, at a certain point in time, they'll get cheap enough. But there's just so many that are still like, okay, well, yeah, I want to jump into that. And then you look at the financials, and you're like, you look at, the cash flows, and you look at, start putting your CFA hat on, you're like, well, none of these stocks still make any sense at these prices. And that's what we saw in 2001 and 2002. We saw, those multiples come down, down, down. And it's eventually, 2 years later, the NASDAQ bottom being down 81% on the NASDAQ. And the difference is the NASDAQ isn't all these growthy names anymore. We know it's those top five names, which were never crazy overvalued anyways. So that's why the NASDAQ, you're like, wow, there's no correction. The QQQs are holding up. But there's so much Google and Amazon and Apple. I mean, Amazon, you can say, is a higher PE, but we know they can have more earnings if they want to. So it's
who can we bring on? There's got to be someone lot smarter than us that, tracked, how the PEs came down in these stocks back in 99, 2000, right? Because Zoom, what was it over? I don't even,
like
I can't remember.
Sales. So yeah, PE like 130 or 140.
Yeah. But I wondered where there's a point, where these stocks came down to as far as on a PE basis. Mm. We don't know where they came down in price, but just to see a progression. Maybe if you see that, get a chart of the PE and it's just going, it went straight up and straight down, right? Yeah. And then it maybe stabilized. Maybe when it can stabilize at like 35 or something like that. But who do we got? Who do we have that would be able to?
Let me think. Although,
we'll leave that with Spencer. We're not going to figure that out live on the show.
Potentially our Friday guest could help us out with that, Trevor Neal. But
Let's jump into some individual stories.
Let's go.
The big story of the day.
Okay, but before we do that, the last thing I want to add, and Easy Mike pointed this out in the chat, is that the timing, as far as the value stocks go, and the banks, the timing is interesting here, right? Because the banks report earnings next week, right? Yeah. So we're like T-minus like 6 trading days from bank earnings reports. Yeah. So to have a huge rally into, we see this a lot, but it's happening into earnings season here. So the timing of this rally in banks is interesting. So it's a good point. Earnings next week. Just don't forget that, everyone. But as far as individual news here, there's a few things. Beyond Meat is probably going to be your biggest mover or your biggest headline of the morning here. What is the stock up now? I haven't even checked.
We got breaking news here, too. Just stop for a second.
What do you got?
ADP.
Okay. Yep. I told you about this.
Yeah, you told me about it, but come on now.
I just saw the S&P start moving, so that's why I was like, oh, there's...
He's getting Joelitis on the S&P.
Yeah, it's getting Joelitis. Actually, that's interesting because ADP came in way...
Yeah, so I'm a little bit disappointed in you, and the only reason is because, okay, that wasn't that big of a move, right? From it went from 98 to 85, but look what it did in the after hours, or in the pre, well, I guess we could in the pre-market. I mean, it went down to 66.50. It almost went down to yesterday's low. The follow-through in the S&P.
We aren't talking the S&P anymore. We forbid it from the show. It's too boring. I just said it's moving.
Beyond me.
Well, hold on, though. That ADP number was
they love that ADP number.
Surprising, to say the least. ADP, I don't know if I remember seeing a beat that big. The ADP print for December, this is private sector jobs, 807,000 versus an estimate of 375. That's a key. I don't know if I've seen a beat that big before. Now, the ADP number of the three main payroll data points, you got ADP, you've got jobless claims, and you've got the actual jobs number. The ADP is the one that I think has the highest beta. That's the one that, or at least has the highest variance. But still, though, 807,000 versus a 300,000 estimate, I mean, or 375 is pretty big beat. So anyway, we'll see what that tells us about. I don't know what that says about Friday's number, but the jobs number this Friday will be the more important figure. But anyway, ADP out this morning, big beat. Beyond Meat is your big stock news story of the morning. Or I guess it came out yesterday, but they, after testing their products in KFC locations, for a couple years now, they announced yesterday a nationwide rollout of Beyond Meat plant-based chicken in KFC, and it's happening.
This is their big contract. The chicken, the fake chicken, got the chicken contract. KFC's huge for them, so this is huge news for Beyond Meat. I think if we were in normal, like we're in the markets we were a year ago, Joel, like take us back and they released this information in January of 2021, the stock could be up 30% on this headline. But we're in this we hate growth stocks and they don't make money phase, so it's up 9. But I'm not coming in to buy it. I'm not coming to short it. The stock is absolutely hated. The stock is absolutely overvalued. Fantastic news for the company, though. I mean, this is a big contract for them. You think they tried Tim Hortons, they tried McDonald's. Now they got KFC. They got the chicken. That's what they wanted, the chicken contract.
People go to KFC for greasy chicken. They don't go there for plant-based chicken. But
they don't want to eat the plant. Maybe they will, though. Maybe this is actually going to make me feel okay eating KFC, because I tell you, I go to KFC. 10 minutes later, I got to visit the bathroom. So maybe if I'm switching over to the fake chicken, maybe that's going to be okay. I love KFC. I can only go there like once a year, though, because I get sick from it right away. But yeah. And it's cheap, too. I mean, I don't know about their costs. That's the one problem is Beyond Meat. That was the problem when I went to McDonald's. You get the Beyond or A&W, you go to the Beyond Meat burger, and it's like twice as much as a normal burger. Mm-hmm. KFC, bucket of chicken, you still get for like $20-$25. I don't know. Can you do a bucket of Beyond Meat? It ain't going to be $25.
Well, you just got to be careful when you're holding the real chicken, that if when you're holding the bucket, if the grease doesn't go through the bucket and then you drop the bucket in the parking lot, you know, from all the grease soaking through.
It's a greasy. It's a greasy.
I don't know.
Did you guys
know what I'll say? You know what I'll say about Beyond Meat? We don't buy it anymore. I mean, I told Lisa, I'm like, you know, whatever. I'll eat tofu before I'll eat a Beyond Meat. And the Beyond Meat sausages or even hot dogs are even worse. But here's the deal if you're trading this. Someone's out there at 68. They like either they're stuck or they bought a boatload yesterday and they're just trying to get out between 68 and 68 and a quarter. So if the meme crowd, if the short crowd just says this is the greatest thing ever for Beyond Meat, they're going to barrel through 68 and a quarter and then your next daily high, I mean, you know, whatever. Maybe look at 70, but first things first, let's just get bid, take out 68, get bid over 68, and I think it will run. If not, it might fade, but I'm not showing it either and not buying
it. I'm not trading this because, one, this is a great headline for the company, but two, this is a hated stock. So if I was long, I would probably sell into it. I think you got great resistance up at 70. I can't bring a short on it. One, it's way oversold. Two, it's a really good headline. And three, liquidity is going to be less than something like this, so it could just be wild. I mean, you could short at 67, be 72 in your face, and later in the afternoon, it could be 67.
65.
You get shaken out on it. It's still wild on it. It's going to be wild on it. It's a good headline for the company, but the valuation's nosebleed. Long term, I still think Beyond Meat's a lot lower, but I think short term, it's getting a lift from this. I don't know how far this is going to take it.
Did you guys see the viral video? I think it was yesterday. A guy got home and walked into his kitchen and saw a bear eating his bucket of KFC chicken.
Even the bears love it. Look, it tastes awesome.
Look, the bear is
it went through deep. Everything and it went for the KFC.
The bear is neck deep in a bucket of KFC chicken.
Yeah. Wow, what a messy kitchen.
That'd be scared, actually. That would not be good. You know, it's one thing, you know, you get a mouse in your house or something. You got a bear sitting there eating a bucket of chicken, I'd leave the house.
That's
Goldilocks.
That's bearish.
Yeah, hey, that's bearish for sure. Bearish for the house.
The symbol for the Pizza Hut, the KFC, what
Yum.
Is that?
Yeah, it's Yum.
Yeah, how's Yum doing? Did that get China'd?
No, well, there's Yum C, remember? So they separate all the China Yum C. So Yum C got China'd. Yum's right. not, it doesn't have any China anymore. So right. It's been
good.
Holding
that
well.
Was a good move, huh? Look
Yum's
at that.
Yum's been good just because it's all fast food. It's quick service. It works in the pandemic and, you know, obviously, and it works not in the pandemic as well. I mean, it's like McDonald's. You know, both those stocks been straight up for 2 years. A lot of money hiding there. Valuation's an issue with all these things now, too. I mean, some of the value stocks aren't that much value anymore in them. So
survey in the chat. Have you eaten KFC in the last 6 months? We have 49% no, 24% yes, 21% hell no, and 4% ask the bathroom.
I voted for ask the bathroom.
I didn't even get a chance to vote. I didn't even. Anyway, okay.
I did the chicken sandwich survey, Popeyes. That kind of made me sick, and then I did the KFC, and it kind of made me sicker. So I think I'll stick to
that's a win.
The non fried foods there. Okay, let's go. What else? We got stocks. Let's do some stocks.
Always stocks.
So there are other movers in the morning. Wejo is
Wejo.
A headline that we broke. The Benzinga News Desk broke this yesterday, right after the close. Wejo announced a partnership with Microsoft. I think they're going to talk more about this at CES. Actually, I know where they would talk more about this on Benzinga Live today.
Oh, nice.
At like 12, what time? 12:45. We're going to have the CEO of Wejo and somebody from Microsoft on the show to talk about what this deal actually means. Regardless, Wejo's popped up to 965 yesterday after hours.
Faded.
And they're fading it this morning. Yep.
Here's the problem. And I've been following this stock and I regretted not buying
it.
It's
only been out there like.
No. We had the guy that put the spec together on the show, Jeff Warshaw. Oh, okay. Remember?
Yeah.
And here's the problem. They're going up against Google, right? Yeah. And as far as mapping and sensing, and Google's pretty tough. But here's the question. Can they just get, you know, if they could get a smidgen of the market share, right, away from Google, then this could be like a, you know, a super valuable company. You know, once again, you got to make money. So I was looking at it, combing the ditches. I don't like that it's giving back the pop, but this is on my radar. If I owned it into this pop, I would not be selling it, and I am looking to buy it. Full
I know nothing about this company. I'm not even going to comment on this company. It's too small for me. I don't.
Okay.
I'll tell you what they do. If you forget, they're the company that is like connected car data. It's like the Google for the car kind of. I'm not sure.
In reference to what Dennis said about Beyond Meat, if this was SPAC mania, man, this thing would be at like 40 bucks.
If we were in January, we'd be talking about a dozen stocks are up 30% today, January of last year. This is January 2022, though. This is the value market. I like this market better.
You like this one better? Okay.
Yeah, I'm a value guy, so I kind of like this market better.
Every time value has been in favor, it lasts for like a week, maybe two.
This is like 9 months now. This is not, you know, something that just happened.
Right.
Value has been in favor for a long time here, and we just haven't real. I mean, we've talked about it, and it's just been the slow, steady trickle from growth to value to growth to value. And then you turn around, and you look, and you're like, holy macro, Warren had a really good year. Yeah, he did. Holy macro, Kathy had a really bad year. Yeah, she did. Yeah, all turned 10, 11 months ago. It turned 11 months ago.
Yeah.
Berkshire Hathaway broke out from 240 back in February, has never looked back. It's up like 70 points on 240, 25-30%. And Kathy broke down from her high 151, and she's never looked back either, straight down. we have been trickling into value for 11 months. So you can say, oh yeah, it's only a week or two, or it's only a couple of days in 2022, but this trade's been going on for a long time. It almost feels like it could be like the capitulation to a certain extent here now, where it's starting to get just silly.
Yeah, that's it.
That's what I said before, but you said you didn't want to call the bottom in anything. But
I don't. Yeah.
No, you trying to call the top.
I tried to call the bottom in all the counties.
I was going to call the bottom in
January. How'd that work for me?
I like you stuck with it, though, Dennis. You stuck with it. You stuck with it. You had an idea. You had a plan. You stuck with it.
I stopped out on all of them.
Dennis, me too, yesterday in Palantir.
We both got stopped out on Palantir, which probably is going to be the low.
That's what Spencer
said. It's going to be the low. I sold everything I had. So the ones I had SE, which I actually got out on the pop on that one. Thank goodness. Thank you, Bank America. So I got lucky in that one. But I had about 7 or 8. I had never put on a full like go all in because it never really gave me the signal to do that. But I was ready. I was ready. And then it just didn't work out. I didn't like the first day of trading where they kind of were just not going. They didn't. And then yesterday, obviously, it sold off substantially. So, yeah. So I had like 5 or 6 growthy names I had put on. Like I said, a half dozen. SE was one of them. I sold that.
Ooh,
I
had Space,
SPC. I lost on that one. I had Palantir. I lost on that one. I don't remember. There's a few other ones, too. But I got them all.
You're going to have to do a rescue mission in that swing account.
There's no rescue missions here. You take your losses and you move on. You don't try to rescue a loser. You take your losses.
I didn't realize that Space was one of those that you were
in. Well, I don't like talking which ones I have either. So until after the fact. Yeah, because I had 4 or 5 lows in the same area. You can see what I was looking at. I got a little double bot. I actually was up in it briefly. You know, when we had that big rally like Thursday last week, and then comes the first day of January, it's like, it's not going. And then it's like, oh, they're selling them all. And you know what? It's still holding the lows. So it actually still, I probably shouldn't have stopped myself out on this one. I actually have all those lows there.
But yeah, that's still there. But just the
ugliness of ARKK yesterday, I was like, I don't want to own any growth either. So.
Yeah.
All interesting.
They are. Yeah, that's the caveat. Like they are all still holding their lows. So
yeah. So we probably shouldn't have stopped out on any of them. You know what's going to happen, Spencer? We're going to be complaining here in a week as they all take off, and Kathy Wood rips up through $100, and we're like, oh my gosh, why did we sell? Never take a loss.
Volunteer's going like 21 now, and I'm going to be anyway. Whatever. Real quick, we're going to have Joe Saluzzi on in a few minutes.
Joe's coming.
We'll get Joe's thoughts on everything.
It made my whole day.
I want to go back up in the topics for a second because we skipped over CES, and that starts, I believe, today. So we're going to get a lot of, like, a lot of cool, techie headlines out of companies like Sony. They unveiled some EV prototype. We're gonna get John Deere, which you mentioned, Dennis. John Deere, you were saying, oh, it's up because it's Deere and its value. To that, I say, what about John Deere's first autonomous tractor, which will be
available come out?
Yesterday? Yesterday.
Oh, so that was the driver.
Autonomous tractor.
No, it has no driver. Dennis.
I know. I saw it as soon as it came out of my mouth. I was like, somebody's gonna hit that softball up the middle.
Yeah. Mobileye or Intel, whatever. Mobileye had a thing, a self-driving car thing. So there's gonna be a lot of like tech headlines coming in the next 3 or 4 days. So be mindful of that. Self-driving cars is going to be a big theme. The metaverse is going to be a big theme. Keep an eye on Meta, which is your metaverse ETF.
I'm still bearish the metaverse. I'm the only person maybe, but
we're not going to let you in.
Yeah, I'm sure if I could short the person that bought $250 million worth of metaverse property, I just think, okay, it's advertising space, I guess, but I think we're way too early on this metaverse thing. I don't think everybody's going and buying their Oculus and putting this on and wasting their time.
That looks so heavy.
Metaverse.
But you know what? I'll tell you, Todd Gordon, we did that thing with Todd Gordon, and he had him on his deck. It was great. We had Todd Gordon and Gene Munster on a couple of weeks ago, and Todd had his Oculus goggles, and he talked about he was on vacation in Florida, and he had a trade set up, and to his Oculus goggles, he was able to sign in to his computers at home and do like a video or be on CNBC.
That's pretty cool.
He could move his monitors around and everything. I was going to call him up.
He was reaching out through the metaverse and actually moving the monitors.
That's cool.
That stuff's cool.
I will add that the Oculus apparently did very, very well this holiday season.
Yeah, I know.
I saw a thing from, I forget who the firm was, but like daily active users were up like 90% year over year. Christmas of 21 compared to Christmas 20. The Oculus app was like the hottest app in the App Store last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever. So apparently it had a very good holiday season. A lot of people buying the Oculus.
It reminds me of Google Glass.
No, it's way better than that.
I think we're just too early. I think, you know, paying nosebleed valuations for all these metaverse companies, maybe you buy Facebook. You know, maybe that's the simplest way to play it. But again,
they did
to Gene Munster's point, and Gene is awesome. We listen to Gene, obviously, friend of the show. He says Apple and Facebook are your pure plays, you know, big plays on the metaverse. So I think you're right. I think Microsoft, I think Apple, I think it's going to be, you know, these smaller companies that you think, okay, yeah, Unity. But, you know, you're playing nosebleed valuations. Then you look, okay, well, I paid 22, 23 times earnings for a Google or a Facebook. And guaranteed they're going to be big players if the metaverse materializes. And if they don't, they got all their other cash cows too. So maybe it's just another excuse to own the mega caps because they just seem to win in everything. So I think at the end of the day, when we look at the metaverse, the big players are going to be Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft. They're all going to be big players in the metaverse too. So I'm long all those stocks. So I guess I am long the metaverse.
The big get bigger. It applies to more than just the S&P. It applies to everything. The big get bigger.
Well, that's the way it is. I mean, those are the smartest people. Amazon's obviously gotten to every single business, you know, same way. I mean, those are the smartest companies, smartest people. It's why they have the highest market caps. Why Apple's worth $3 trillion. Mm-hmm. So I just think gambling on some small little metaverse play may not even be the easiest. It might just be buy Facebook. And you're not going to make, you know, I know, you know, people want to make 200, 300% on their money. They got really spoiled in 2020 and the first week or first month of 2021. But I think people are starting to realize, hey, that the stock market isn't as easy as we thought. You know, the people who thought I'm a genius at this, I think, you know, a lot of those people got caught up in the growth names and there's some really good traders out there. And a lot of them are in this chat. So, I mean, we've had some traders, you know, and Christian Fromhertz, think about him, you know, he's always playing the momentum. I've given Christian another shout out there because he beat the S&P, you know, heavily last year again, which is tough to do. You know, I have no idea what my returns, you know, are on my day trading portfolio because I'm using prop money. So it's really hard to figure out. I think I do really well in my day trading. You know, the swing trading, I think I do okay. I go with some trends. Long-term investing, I just kind of go with the flow. I don't know if I'm a great long-term investor, so I don't even know, like, my percentage returns would definitely be less usually on both sides than the S&P because I have a really conservative portfolio. So because I'm aggressive enough in my trading that I kind of invest conservatively. I never invest in something with a P of like 30, 40, 50. I'm a value guy. I'm a Warren Buffett approach.
On that note, I mean, Mitch pointed this out yesterday to us. I mean, Warren Buffett's, you know, Apple has grown to be a sizable piece of Berkshire Hathaway, and
really 40%? That's what Mitch was saying in the pre-market show, that Apple has grown into 40% of Berkshire's market cap. Does anybody have confirmation on that? Yeah. I've not looked in Berkshire under the hood. I know different companies, but I didn't look at the percentages.
Let's take a look. Yeah. Well, as of the last filing, which we know is, you know, these are delayed. But yeah, as of the last 13F, it's 45%.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And remember, he said he was late.
And he's always diversified. He guaranteed he's going to be trimming.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't see him not trimming. I know he doesn't like to sell, but 45%. You own Apple now.
When he bought Apple, what, like 2016, whenever, he was like, yeah, I should have bought this year. I should have bought this years ago.
Yesterday, Joel, between Burke and Apple? Apple was down and Burke ripped higher despite owning 45% of it. I guess those banks were just that good, though.
You know what? You think about one thing with Warren, too, and he did this in 20, but what if he wanted to dump that Delta? all that delta at $20. Just think, you know, that thing is doubled. He'd be like, the Berkshire would be at like 350, 360. That was in 20. But no, I mean, he didn't like the position and he sold it. But just think about, you know, that loss that he took on that and what his return is, and then what his return would be if he just, you know, even if he just, you know, held a little chunk, like, oh, maybe it's going to come back.
All right, let's get Joe Saluzzi's thoughts on all of this. Joe is the founder of Themis Trading, a co-founder. He's a partner there and one of our favorites to bring on. So let's bring Joe on right now. Joe, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic. What do you make of the first couple of days of 22 in terms of the market? And we were talking about just the spread between value and growth yesterday.
Yeah, no, that was interesting. You know, but before I even comment there, Dennis was just talking about 200% returns and, you know, hey, we can't do as well as last year. Back in the 90s, I don't know if you guys were around in 99, 2000, I was at a firm called InstaNet and we had like a 401k, whatever. And we were invested in these tech funds and whatever in the 401k. And they returned literally 200%, some of them. And there were guys on the desk complaining that they only got 125% in their fund. We all know what happened the next couple of years, right? So you have to be careful. You know, everybody thinks they're geniuses. Oh, am I going to get 200% a year? Not going to happen, right? Not going to happen. And we've seen it first. You know, we've learned and lived and loved it. Not loved it, hated it. But, you know, you got to be measured.
Have you seen any change in your clients' like perception of this market with relation to value versus growth? Because I know like a year and a half ago, if you were talking a boring value stock, you know, even in our chat or on our show, people don't even want to hear it. They want to hear what's the sexy story, you know, it's all about what's going. Well, we don't care about valuation, we're buying. And, you know, and that's what was working. And now it's completely changed. You know, the story doesn't matter at all. It's like, what's the PE on that thing? I mean, finally, people are asking, what's the PE on the thing? Are you seeing any change in your own customers?
No, you know, I think our clients are most, you know, they're all institutional level. So they have very specific things that they're doing. So maybe someone's a small cap, somebody's more global, somebody's, you know, particular sectors, and they have strict rules and they're doing, you know, certain things. In fact, if sometimes if stock gets too high, they'll trim it off because it's too big a percentage of that portfolio. They have to keep their risk measures in place. But, you know, these guys are pros. They know exactly what they're doing. They know what their investors are looking for. You know, I may go, let's just say you invested in a fund that was focused on short sell. Well, you're going there because you want that focus, and you, maybe you put in your portfolio something else. So, but you're going to particular funds because of what that fund offers as an expertise. And I think a lot of our clients are exactly that. They've got expertise in certain areas, and those funds are going to do what they expect. Now, they may not beat the S&P 500, but will they beat their benchmark in that sector? And I think that's what everyone's looking at. But as opposed to yesterday, like you were saying, but that was a massive switch in value versus growth. To me, that felt more systematic, programmable, you know, program trading style. It was, stocks were just moving, and it wasn't basic level supply and demand. And I was trading some stocks where I was buying, and these were, you know, financials, and they were going up, and I'm like, okay, this is weird. Market's coming in, and everything was very strange yesterday. But then mid-afternoon, everything switched, right? So all of a sudden, we had that nice rally in the tech sector towards the back end. It felt to me more like some big player might have been coming in, putting in some sort of program style.
How different is the trading? And obviously, I kind of know the answer to the question, but how different is it from when you started? Go back to the 90s and think about how you were trading. And now it's like, you know, even with the algorithmic trading, I mean, you're fighting these, especially if you train some mid-cap stock. I try to buy, you know, I put an order out there, you know, and obviously, you know, you've got to use different things. But if you just show your hand, it's like, I throw a 50 bid and they take the 60 on you and then they go 60 bid on you. It's like, oh, we got a hot one. Let's take this up on them. I mean, the algorithmic, you know, what you want to call the predatory trading out there is something else.
Yeah, I call them parasites. They're a bunch of parasites. They add no value. They're leeches. They're looking for your flow to come off of and basically, you know, clip a penny or two. So they've been there forever, right? Those are the HFT parasites, right? It's different than a market maker. It's different than, you know, these parasites are proprietary traders. They've got, you know, obviously the best systems, got co-location. They've got the speed. They do all that stuff. And they're looking for you. And they're trying to spot you. And the whole system, as we've talked about many times, is set up so that they can do that. Stock exchanges will sell them data fees. They'll give them high-speed lines. They'll give them everything they possibly can to find your order. So like you said, Dennis, suppose you're sitting in, you know, the stock is a 10-cent spread and you want to tighten it. You don't want to pay the offer. So you post a bid, maybe, you know, 3 cents better than the higher bid. As soon as you do that, They're going to see that. Of course, everybody else will see that. But the difference is, on a data feed, you can see the person who entered it. You can see the time it entered. You can, not the person. You can see the order coming in. And they know that, we call it blinking. So the high-speed guys will constantly move their quotes back and forth. Well, you're sitting there and you're not blinking. So once you're sitting there, they can spot you and then either basically take advantage of you or at least learn some information. That hasn't changed in 15 years, but that's, yeah, it's, you know, it's been there and it'll continue to be there.
I mean, it's a real bet. And, you know, this market is full of, you know, just floating liquidity where it's market making different things. And all of a sudden they got a real bet. You'd be shocked if you took away all of the market making, you took away all of the, you know, the floating liquidity and you looked at what we had, we'd be left with like nothing out there. So then, you know, you just have a few real bids and offers. And when the real bid comes in, even if it's 100 shares, it's shocking. Even if you go bid for 100 shares on some mid-cap stocks, like, oh, we got a buyer. I mean, 30 years ago, nobody gave a crap about 100 shares. But 100 shares is like,
it's the market it. Takes it's off it. On it now.
Yep. Well, and even if, say, you put that bet out there and then you cancel it, they're assuming that you're canceling to take the offer. So then watch when you, not only when you place the bid, watch when you cancel the bid, watch the action that goes on there. But I think, you know, SEC Chair Gensler mentioned this a couple of times last year in a few of his speeches. He wants more order-to-order interaction. In other words, that natural liquidity, which is being intercepted by market makers and others, they're never meeting. So how do you get orders to interact with other orders? That's difficult because of all the noise that's in between. Like you just mentioned, the real liquidity is a lot smaller. I think yesterday we traded 11.5 billion shares. I would bet real liquidity is maybe a third of that or something. It's a lot of noise. And yeah, volume was there, but it's noise volume in our opinion. So what my job is during the day is to find natural liquidity and to make sure my clients don't get involved in that noise and to try to parse it out. So we use various tools. Obviously, we try to be different. You know, my biggest word that we always use is we're random. We randomize our approach because once you become systematic, they can spot you. If you're doing the same thing over and over again, you're easily spotted. And a lot of the algorithms do that still. So we do random things. We've got direct connections to various exchanges. Obviously, IEX, we talked about them a lot. That's our favorite exchange. We get our most liquidity there. We get the biggest chunks there. I mean, seriously, the volume that it's a lot different, but the trick is to be patient. You know, a lot of people don't want to be patient. They want those algos to work and keep continuing to get in there. If you're patient enough, what we'll say is you cast out a net, right? Say you have a big fishing ship and you put your net out there. You're waiting for the fish to come to you. You don't have to always go get the fish. Wait for them to come to you. And once they get in the net, you'll be in a much better situation. Then you can dictate price. Now it's coming to you. You're controlling the stock better as opposed to, okay, I'm going to go chase these guys all day long. It doesn't work, especially when you're trying to accumulate size during the day.
Joe, I wanted to ask you about the IEX. How's the volume? Has it been picking up over there? I know it's Brad Kutsuyama started that a while ago. What would you say percentage of your business you're doing over there?
We are consistently, Joe, 25-30% of our volume every day. And that's on an exchange that is listing 2-3% market share. So how am I, and I'm not sacrificing.
You're a big player. You're a big What's player that? Over there on IEX.
We got a co-locate. We got a co-locate.
Group basket at Christmas.
My house right next to Joe.
But think about it. We're a small independent brokerage firm in New Jersey, and I can get that kind of volume on the exchange. You know, what am I doing differently than everybody else? Well, like I mentioned before, I use it differently. I don't chase things around. I try to make them come to me. But the thing about IEX that's different, and we've talked about this before, is they don't supply an order-by-order data feed to the market. In other words, NASDAQ, NYSE, SIBO, they all supply data feeds, which HFT guys can buy and then re-engineer what's in the book. They can figure out. But IEX doesn't do that. There's only aggregated order levels as to where they are. They can't find me. And if they can't see me, they can't take advantage of me. And that's really the trick. But you have to have clients who also understand that and say to you, okay, Joe, I know what you're doing. Here's my order. Take care of it. Do a good job. We'll measure it afterwards on various, you know, statistics. They trust us. And really, the key to this business is I've been in the business since 90, well, God, I don't want to say it, but a long time. And the key has always been trust. If your clients trust you and you know what you're doing, you'll be okay. It's when some guys, what happens is they get the economics change, all of a sudden their margins start to compress and they do things they shouldn't be doing, like in any other business. And then guess what? You're not trustworthy anymore, in my opinion, and I wouldn't do business with you at that point.
Joe, I just wanted to ask you, we talk a lot about, you know, institutional accumulation and distribution and, you know, and I'm not asking about any one particular client, but just like on a whole, like if someone wants to take a one of your medium sized or larger sized institutions wants to, you know, take a stake in, you know, XYZ. I mean, you know, they're giving you an order. I mean, does it, you know, can sometimes you get the order, does it vary 1 or 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, or sometimes do you got something on your book for a couple weeks until you get it at the price that you want?
Yeah, it depends on the client. Some are much more aggressive and will be like, listen, I want to max out my volume right away. Get it done. Get it. You know, I have an arrival price. That's my benchmark. And if it's a thick stock, like, you know, pick out one of the big caps, you can pretty much trade that fairly easy. We don't trade many of those stocks that have, you know, 10, 20 million shares a day. I'm trading stocks that are probably between 1 and 5 million shares a day, average daily volume. And those are the ones, like you're saying, you have to work with them. And then you're strategizing all day long with the client as well. And if you see something going on that maybe changes your strategies, say, for instance, we're working, I've accumulated 25,000 shares, maybe I'm 20% of the volume. And all of a sudden I see a big print go off and I see somebody advertising it, 50,000 shares trades, and maybe it's LiquidNet or one of these crossing systems. You're talking to the client and you're saying, listen, something just happened. Maybe we need to change our approach here. But otherwise, you might be just doing percentage of volume, possibly with a lot of times we'll get this direction, you know, be involved, but I would if I could, which means that if you see something, get it. Let's get it in here. But I don't want you pushing the stock also. So depending on the name, I've worked names for weeks. Yes, absolutely. And some days you'll take a day off from it and you'll give it a break and you'll see, hey, is that me pushing the stock? And a lot of times they will do that even during the day. Why is that stock moving? You're watching the sector, obviously, you're seeing if something else is going on. But it certainly depends on the client. And that's where it's still really important to keep that communication with your client, where I think a lot of Wall Street firms have lost this over the years. They've gone to algorithms, they've gone to junior traders, and pretty much everybody puts it in the box, they call it and they set it and forget it. But those are the ones that get spotted easily because the HFT guys are out there waiting for that. And they're waiting to take advantage of it.
I just got one more for you, and then I'll let the Triple D take it away. Like, let's say another thing. Like, stop. Let's say you have $5 million to go in like XYZ, and they want to sell it at the point, right? They want to sell it at double O. Do a lot of times, do you let that thing, you know, if there's other size there, do you let it get taken out and then, you know, let it go up 20, 25 cents and then come in with your order and slam it? Or because you see that so many times, you know, everyone takes the book out at the even number, they show their hand, everybody's like, bye, 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 bye. Then it goes up 15, 20 cents, and then boom, it's locked down at the point again. Is that a familiar strategy?
It's funny. There's an old expression in the business where if a client gives you a limit order, they'll say it's a limit, not a target. Right. Okay. Take it down there. Right. Don't take it to the point where let's see if we could do a little bit better on price too. So no, we're not going to go slam it down. We're going to try to work with it. We're going to feel that volume out. Right. A lot of times I'll just peg my order. Sometimes I'll let it float throughout, but I don't want to miss liquidity either. So it's a fine line there where I want to get a better price, but I also need to move stock. And especially if, you know, say you're working 25, but you know, you've got another 200 behind. Well, you can't get too cute, right? You know, we'll call each, somebody will scream at me on the desk here, hey, cutesy bootsy, sell the stock, right? That's what we still get the old terms.
That's great. I love that.
Right? And because you got to keep going because maybe you did great on the 25, but guess what? You got 200 to go and now the price is slipping on you. So you can't be too careful, but it's a balancing act there. And it's the experience of the trader, knowing the markets. We've got guys here who have been 20, 25 years in the business. They know what they're doing. They can feel the stock. They communicate with the client. And you switch up your strategy as you're going, you know, depending on what the market conditions are.
All right. Joe Saluzzi is a partner and co-founder of Themis Trading. Joe, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for coming.
Way up. Too long. How did all we right. not have him on more often?
A long time.
That handsome mug, man. Yeah, I mean, we got
it. Market structure world's been quiet. We usually talk about that. Maybe that's why.
I know. We didn't even get into any market structure. Next time, bring him back next week. We got to get into market
next week. Joe Saluzzi.
Bring you him back.
It, guys. Anytime. I love doing it.
Have a good one. Thank you. All right, let's do this. We got 10 minutes left. We'll drop your tickers in the chat. We'll do some ticker time. But we know what we also need is a few more likes. We're at 234. We should be able to get to like 600.
I'm going to like the show right now. Going on there. Clicking
is this
like.
Right? Do we not have any dislikes? Everyone likes
don't
us.
Talk about dislikes.
Oh. Everyone likes us. That's unbelievable.
Dirty word.
That's fine.
Dirty.
That's
dirty
not
word.
True. I know there's some people out there.
Oh, don't, Dan. Don't get them going. Don't.
We there's a lot of people out that. There don't like
this
you.
It's your
Dennis.
Fault, Joel.
No, they. You can dislike us, but there's no counter, so we can't see.
Oh, maybe. Really?
Yeah, YouTube.
There's always a counter for that.
No, yeah. YouTube got rid of it.
Seriously?
Yeah, because they don't want the incentive of people just brigading.
Then
videos.
Why don't they just take it off there?
Well, that's crazy.
Boy, I don't know. You ask them, man. let's do some ticker time. What tickers jump out to me in the chat? Okay, this is one from yesterday that we talked about. Joel and I did at the close. Rekha asked about Alibaba. That had a very interesting day because on the one, it held up better than a lot of its peers. And then two, Munger, a report from Bloomberg came out that Charlie Munger had doubled his stake in the company.
I like to see where he started buying this puppy.
You got a nice double bottom, Joel. Look at this.
I know. We talked about it yesterday.
Me and Joel like those setups. You got a little pullback into it. You're risking $3. I kind of want to buy it, but it's so bloody hated. You just like every time I want to buy this, it's like, you know, China ends up doing something and saying something else, and then they hammer all the Chinese stocks again. So, you know, it keeps getting China'd. The valuation, I mean, we're moving a value market. It's been left in the dust, you know, even though it's a value stock because nobody wants to, you know, gamble on what's next for Alibaba from China. I kind of like it. I don't own it. I owned it for a long time. We know I sold out the rest of my position at 240 and then the rest of it at 148 after the earnings miss. And it was a good sale. I kind of want to rebuy it. But again, I just don't think I want a piece of China. So I don't know. As a trade, it sets up 115.82, 115.77. It sets up not bad. If you're trying it long here, I won't argue with you.
All right. Yeah. Again, same story. Holding the low.
Well, he'll argue with you, but he'll temper.
Well, I'll argue with everybody about it.
What about Generac? I got asked about this one yesterday.
That got the beat yesterday.
Hiding out in that, too. It's not you know value. It was growth.
Someone asked me about
sneaky
that
growth stock
in pre-market prep plus, and I said, you know what, you need a national disaster, and you haven't had a national disaster. Look at that; that took out the low of the move. Holy macro! I hope they waited on that one. If you're looking for your next stopping point, boom, 314.01. That's your next monthly low coming in, and I bet you this. Can you look? Was this earnings day? November 2nd. Was that when they had earnings? Look at that earnings reversal. Holy mackerel, 200 points.
PE 60 to PE 40. That's basically what happened. Nobody wants to own anything. It's actually quite simple what's been going on. You got a nosebleed PE above 50, they don't want to own it. You got a PE below 20. That's what they're liking. You got a PE below 10, they're buying those stocks. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're in here right now. GNRC, I believe, is trading around 40 times earnings now. So still? It's coming a bit, but it's still not cheap. If it came into like 200, all the value investors like myself say, okay, cheap enough now. There's still growth 200. There. Generators aren't going away. I bought one for my new home, obviously. You know, they're not cheap. I think I have $16,000 or $17,000.
Wow.
They're not cheap.
Hey, Dennis, so, make sure you get it tuned up every year. Don't get lazy on that.
I think they self-start, don't they, like once a week, I think?
I'm telling you, because we do that. I don't like forking out the couple hundred bones every year, but some other people in my family haven't done that yearly thing, and then when they needed it, they didn't have it. So
is yours a Generac?
Or
you got a knockoff?
Yeah, no, I think I have something better than the Generac.
There's nothing better than the Generac.
I bought my generator is probably a dozen years old, maybe even more. I got it when we had that. Remember when we had when the whole grid went out in like Pennsylvania and New York?
They went that blackout.
Oh, 2000
I was in university.
Yeah, 2004. I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's
no,
when I
it
got
was
my...
before that, wasn't it?
No, I
know
it
was that.
Yeah, I
was
remember
it 2004?
That. And it was July, I think. I remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And everyone went black for a day.
And yeah, I got a generator day. The next week. I
you got
nothing.
A generator. It was intimidating.
I beat the rush.
Yeah. That's
you know true. What? It was 2004 because I was in the condo. Then I was still living in my condo.
Or 03.
And actually, my toilets wouldn't even work because they were powered in the condo. So I was like, you couldn't even use, like, you know, normally power goes out, you still use your toilet, but in that case, you couldn't. So,
yeah. All right. Yosh says it was 03.
I left the house for about 8 hours and the power came back.
All right. I was off by a year, apparently. Whatever.
Yeah, that was 03. That was awesome.
Whatever. Okay. Let's keep going in the stocks here. Let's look at, there's a bunch of these. We can look at like Caterpillar or a Cummins, right? CMI.
Same thing. Stocks ripping.
Yeah.
Separate it. It's as simple as this right now in this market. You got value, low PE, and you got growth, high PE. And, you know, there's relationships there, but throw everything in the value bucket or everything in the growth bucket right now. It's all that matters right now. If we see a turn, and we might see a turn again, you got to be ready for those turns. So, you know, again, it's you know, individual company fundamentals matter, but right now, all that matters is your PE high or your PE low, because that's what they were buying and selling. It might turn, like Joe Saluzzi was even saying yesterday afternoon, you saw it turn a little bit. It got overbought, the value, and the growth got oversold, and it came in, you know. Does that continue? Do we see a reversal today? Well, we don't know that, but you got to use, you know, watch your ARC, watch your Berkshire, watch your indicators so you can get on the right side of it. So because the turns are vicious, man, you got to be on the right side of those trades.
Look at this SE, Dennis. Holy macro. Yeah. Down another 8 sticks.
Yeah, is that getting is that oversold massively? Is it, you know, done? I don't know. Tencent got out good though. Where was their price? They were geniuses over there.
202.
Yeah, they priced it. They got out 203, 204. So nice job, Tencent. They're traders over there. I think it's 189 now.
Hey,
I got out just in time too. That Bank America upgrade.
That upgrade. Oh my god.
They top ticked it on that thing. They top ticked it open 230. So the trading of that. So I was long SE. I just tell you the story behind it. I went long SE, I believe. About the 28th or 29th, I bought it pretty good. I bought like 213, and it went up the next day. Remember, we had the big Thursday rally and all the growthy names went to 227. I was like, oh, yeah, we're setting up well now. You know, you're like, okay, my trade's setting up well. And then, you know, we get to January, and we open up at 230, and then I watched my SE trade fall from 230 to 218. It lost 14 points in about 10 minutes.
Right,
and I'm like, they're reversing this whole trade. They're going to pull the rug out from under it. But then they always give you some life. So it gave you the afternoon rip-roaring rally. So that's when I lightened up. And I didn't get out at 225. It would have been nice. I think I got like 221 or something. But, you know, I got out because I started selling. That's when I started selling some of those names. I said that on the show. The next morning, I was like, I had to lighten up because I don't like the tape. And then, obviously, you know, yesterday, if you had anything of those growthy names, you're getting stopped out left and right.
Hey,
so from what about new lows?
Sorry, go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I know you probably weren't, you know, you were just using the triple D, you know, sensor feel on this. And but I followed that trade through you. First of all, it opened up at 30.71 and went 50 cents higher, and then it came back down through the open. But that pop that you caught was right near, there was like a triple close at the 223 area. So I know you probably weren't drilling down on it, but when, you know, stocks have a big open like that and then they're way up and then they wash out, a lot of people start focusing on the mark. And I know you were just like using your senses just to get the hell out of it. But I did see the bounce, and this bounce right here, it did get back, you know, it did get green a little bit, but then boom, that was it after that.
Well, pull up that GE chart.
So what happened to GE yesterday? Holy man.
GE going to 100? I mean,
value.
Went to 100 yesterday.
Well, that reverse split.
What's the PE on GE? So first exercise. This is we're in a new world, folks. First exercise, bring up your trusty Benzinga Pro and look at what the PE of the stock is.
The forward PE is 24, which is actually right in line with the S&P 500.
So it's not expensive. So I don't know if you could call it a value stock, but it's not expensive. Do I want to own GE in my long-term portfolio? No, I just think the company just figures out how to do everything wrong. But right now, that kind of stock, it's like, oh, that's not expensive. We'll move into that. That's what the rotation was yesterday. I don't know if it continues. You know, it was a little bit of capitulation. I can't tell you that value is going to continue to rip roar, you know, up cat deer up 20 points. I mean, it was like a sell your peanuts while the circus is in town feel type of day. I know deer is up here again, and maybe it does continue. But you know, in some of these stocks, even Ford yesterday, obviously I'm long Ford, like, holy mackerel. I mean, then the last time Ford was up, it was up like 13% at one point in time. When is the last time Ford Motor Company went up 13%?
I mean, it's doubled
in a day.
It's doubled since September.
But it's not went up 13% any of those days last year, I'm going to gather. That's a huge move. Maybe it did. Maybe it went from 7 to 8, you know, but wow, that's just an impressive move for Ford. I'm still long. I didn't sell any shares. I had a couple people tweeting out at me that they were lightening up. They were asking if I was lightening up.
Wait a minute. Did you rebuy or something? Or
I never sold my Ford.
You never sold your Ford?
No, I've said that multiple times. Listen to the show. I say every time we talk about it.
I thought you did.
No, I sold a piece back at 16, but I've kept the majority of the shares the whole time.
Okay.
So we all bought it together, like $7.50. We all thought it was going to be the EV story eventually. I like the F-150 Lightning. And it got up to a double, and I sold a piece. And then I've kept the rest of it. So I didn't even sell. Usually I sell half when it goes up to double, but I don't think I sold half. I might have sold half. But then I haven't sold any since. So
Timing is hard, everyone. At the stores, bottom line here.
Trading is hard, period. I mean, people in 2020 just think it's easy. I had so many people, this trading's so easy. I know why you've been doing this for 22 years. It's the easiest way to make money. And I'm like, well, it's not going to be, you know, just to buy stock and, you know, sell it a week later when it's up 50% type of market forever. So I'm like, enjoy while it lasts. Yeah. That market's long gone.
No, I remember that TikTok from two summers ago, and it was how do I make money? It's very simple. I buy stock, and when it stops going up, I sell it, right? And yeah, that's awesome. That's great.
That's as simple as it was,
It's so easy. It's so easy.
It was simple back then, but we're at this point now. It's now you've got to use your trading strategies. You've got to understand different things. You got to understand rotations. You got to understand a lot of different things that are happening. So, I mean, it's not as simple as it once was.
It is not. All right, Dennis, we'll let you go. Have a good rest of your day. We'll catch you tomorrow. Everyone, I'm going to hop as well. Don't forget to sign up for a free trial of Benzinga Pro. The link, I'm putting it up on the screen, pro.benzinga.com. Free 2-week trial. For everyone, check it out. It's what I use every day. Joel, Dennis, we all use it all the time. If it's not for you, hey, it's not for you. It's not for everyone. I don't know. Check it out, though. News, research, scanners, movers. We use Benzinga Pro a lot more during the live trading show, which is coming up next right here. Probably usually we start around 9:05. So the stream will end. We'll redirect to that stream, which will start in a couple of minutes. Myself, Mitch, Ryan, Zunaid, talking through the market, through the open, hanging out, talking trades, making trades, making and also losing money on the show. So,
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
That's coming up next. As always, hit the like button, please, and thank you. Remember that all the information on this show and all of our shows are meant to be used as informational purposes and not for investing or trading advice. Thanks to our guest, Joe Saluzzi. Thanks to all of you in our chat. And I'll catch you guys over on live trading starting in 2 minutes. Have a good one.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big.